Hi, welcome to Author's Note.
Don't like, don't listen.
My name is Cass.
And my name is Tees.
Tees.
Yeah?
Who do we have with us today?
This is a recording for our summer camp episodes while Cass is away. So today, our special guest is my good pal, Audrey. Audrey, introduce yourself, please.
Hi, everyone. I'm Audrey, and I do a couple other podcasts that are probably, like, actually pretty relevant to Author's Note, actually. And I'm going to talk about toys today.
Yeah.
Yay. So. Can you tell us a little bit about your other podcasts and where we can find your work?
Sure. Yeah, I can do plugs at the beginning. I am currently the host of two other podcasts on the Noisepace XYZ network. That's, or XYZ, because our webmaster is Canadian. So I am a full-time host of Pod of Greed, which is a Yu-Gi-Oh! Podcast where we are going through the entire franchise. We've just started season two of GX now. I came on as the actual Yu-Gi-Oh! Expert during Duel Monsters. None of my co-hosts, all of my co-hosts basically started watching Yu-Gi-Oh! And podcasting about it on a lark. And I was like, hey, so this has been my hyperfixation for 20 years. You want me to talk about it a little bit? And they were like, yeah, actually. And so I came on as the expert for Duel Monsters, but I actually never made it past Duel Monsters myself. So now I'm in GX and I'm like, I have no idea what's going on with any of this either.
It's a learning experience for everyone.
I have to say, like, it has been very interesting for me to be in a position with something related to Yu-Gi-Oh! Where I'm not an expert, where I really don't know anything about it. So, like, that has been, like, an interesting adjustment for me. And then I'm also with two of my Pot of Greed co-hosts, currently a co-host for this season of Wow, Cool Robot, a Gundam podcast, where we are talking about G Gundam. And it's wacky and not quite as genocide-based as some of the other Gundam
series. As every
series.
Other Gundam season is.
Is it like a watch and record episode podcast? Or is it just...
Okay. Yep. Awesome. Yeah, both of them are watch and record. Pot of Greed, we do 2 to 3 episodes a week. Wow, Cool Robot is 3 episodes a week.
Nice.
G Gundam's much more about the homoerotic tension than about the genocide. And also the, like, funny racism. It is the one where,
delightful.
Like, G Gundam is one with Tequila Gundam. Most famously, Tequila Gundam, which is Mexico's Gundam.
No.
So everyone, so the plot of G Gundam is that, like, a completely separate universe from the other Gundams, like 60 years in the future, rather than going to war. But first of all the countries have fucked off to space colonies because Earth is shit. And rather than go to war to try to figure out who controls space, once every 4 years, every country sends a representative to the Gundam fight.
So this is just the Robot Olympics?
It's the Robot Olympics, and whoever wins the Robot Olympics gets to control space for 4 years.
Wow.
Basically.
I love that.
This sounds like something that Elon Musk would fight for. Sounds like an idea he would hatch.
Elon Musk going to space. This is him going to space. This is why he's going to space in July.
Yeah, he has the apartheid Gundam from South Africa.
Great. Wonderful.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah.
May he die in the robot wars.
Canonly, Mexico's Gundam is called the Tequila Gundam. It does have a sombrero. It's really, really bad.
Oh, I hate that.
Oh, no.
Iraq also has a Gundam. It's called the Scud Gundam off of Scud missiles. This series came out in 1994.
Yeah, it sure did. Oh, my God. Oh, fuck.
Yikes.
Anyway, hey, so those
Gundam?
Are my two others.
So,
hey,
anyways.
Gundam?
Have you guys been watching or consuming any media lately?
I have been watching MasterChef.
Yeah.
I've been watching MasterChef. That's all I have to bring to the table.
Nice.
No pun intended.
Congratulations.
Audrey, what about yourself?
I've been going through all of Star Trek The Next Generation. That's been, like, my big project for the first time.
I was going to say, you and, like, three other friends of mine are doing that right now. That's so fun.
Yeah, it's like TNG or Columbo. Take your pick of, like, old series that everyone's suddenly getting into.
MASH is a wild card, but people have been doing MASH lately, too, I feel
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, I've also seen people getting really into MASH.
I've been, like, a huge TOS fan for years and years, and I never watched any of the series outside of TOS, so I'm like, I'm gonna sit down with my good friend Picard, and it's, like, the first two seasons kind of suck, but, like, everything beyond that is pretty friggin' good.
I've never seen a Star Trek, any of them.
They're good shows, Brent.
The J.J. Abrams movies, that's it.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Some of those are also good. Some of them are not.
Mr. Zachary Quinto. Love your little eyebrows.
Well, the whole deal with them is that they're not little. They're very much not little eyebrows.
Yes, that is the point.
That's the best feature of the movies.
What have I been watching?
What have you been watching?
Well, I've mostly been reading. Like I was saying, wow. How. I know, shocking. But so as I swore after the Interview with a Vampire episode, I was like, God will now enter my body and I will read 7 books. And I have been correct so far. I know in the episode a little while ago, we talked about reading Thinking of Ending Things, and I finished that. And then I read Ghost Wall by Sarah Moss, which is like a Iron Age reenactment gone wrong little novella. Ooh. So I finished up that. And it was kind of sold to me as a bog body horror book, but I don't necessarily think it's horror. I think it's more suspense drama related, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I also did finish Girls 5 Eva, which I talked about in I think the last episode that we recorded, so this is gonna be like 3 weeks later or whatever, but that last episode really put a damper on me, so I don't know if I'll watch season 2, but that's what's up in the teaser. And I'm reading something else, so I'll hear about that eventually.
I watched Tuca and Birdie.
Yes, he's
absolutely incredible. It's absolutely wonderful. I cannot recommend it enough. Yay. I think Tease and I talked about it, but I was very wary of it because I was convinced because they sort of came out around the same time and both have like anthropomorphic characters that it was going to be a BoJack clone, and it very much is not, in like the best way possible. And I don't know that I have ever seen a more careful handling of a sexual assault narrative. Just the nuance. You can really, you can feel the women in the writer's room.
Oh, sure. Fun.
Yeah. I mean, it is by part members of the BoJack team. Like there is overlap on the team, but the stories that they are telling between the two shows are very, very different and very, very separate.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
so Audrey, what are you going to tell us about this week?
So, I am going to talk today about My Little Pony and Transformers, and specific phenomenon that happened in 2010 that essentially saw the almost complete one-to-one reversal of the audiences for these two franchises. So, a quick disclaimer before we get started. I am heavily invested in the Transformers fandom. However, the My Little Pony fandom I am significantly less acquainted with. So some of this is going to likely skew more towards the Transformers side of things as a result.
Fair and valid and understandable.
Yeah.
If you're a listener and love My Little Pony, come up on this. Come talk to us about the pony side. I would love to.
Don't just invite people.
Yes. Hello. Hijack the podcast and talk to me about ponies.
I mean, I will say, listen, I've done my research about this. So there is going to be a lot about the My Little Pony side of things as well. It is just not going to be the same level of like personal investment that I have for Transformers.
All right. Sounds good.
But I'm also, I think it also like lends credence to the point that I'm trying to make about the reversal of the audiences for these. True. That it's like, I am now the target audience for Transformers, the way I'm not the target audience for My Little Pony. And that is like specifically part of what I intend to talk about today.
It's so wild.
And to go into that a little bit more also, like I intend to talk about, again, this very specific phenomenon of these audiences switching between these two fandoms in the late aughts. But this incident is just like the tip of the iceberg for both of these fandoms.
Yeah.
The Transformers and My Little Pony fandoms aren't just each individually massive. They're old. And there are literal decades of lore and incidences that we could talk about for hours. I'd love to hear an episode of Author's Note on like Fallout Equestria.
Oh, buddy.
It's on the list. Audrey, it is on the list.
It's on the list.
But it's going to be me subjecting my dumb little ass to reading it.
Or Michael Bay's sabotage of Mega Fox's career. But obviously we simply don't have the time for that today. So,
as if I, Fallout lover 1996, will not dive headfirst into Fallout Equestria.
But I'm also the one who's always willing to read all the bullshit.
Yeah.
You're like, no, Tease, I will not read.
I have personal boundaries. I will not sacrifice my free time.
Meanwhile, I will.
If I was asked to read something I didn't want to read for my podcast, I would simply say no thank you. Rip to Tease, but I'm different.
What a concept. Am I right?
That's really exactly what happens, though.
I forget what we were recently tackling. Go ahead. Sorry. Go.
Yes. Sorry. No. To get into it, like, one of the main reasons that these two fandoms fascinate me as much as they do is that I count both Transformers and My Little Pony among a handful of, like, truly significant fandoms that originated before the 90s and not only survived, but thrived in the internet age and beyond. Other fandoms in this that I include are like Star Wars, Star Trek, and Lord of the Rings, to give people an idea of sort of what I'm talking about in terms of longevity and also size. Because there's tons of old fandoms out there, but in terms of the thriving part of it, like that is what really gets me.
And it's also not a matter of like reboot too, because I feel like stuff like He-Man and She-Ra and like Voltron, we have these new sets of fans that are able to ignore old lore because of this sudden
because they're separate.
But with Transformers and ponies, man, you gotta know.
I'm going to talk about that later on as well. Both of the franchises have been through multiple reboots, including the reboots in the aughts that really pushed renewed fandom into them. But even with those people, if you are actually engaging in the fandoms of these properties, then you are expected to know at least something of the previous incarnations that happened before those reboots.
How bad would you say that the gatekeeping is within the fandom community because of that?
I don't think, I can only talk for Transformers again because I'm not part of the My Little Pony fandom. And I think the gatekeeping in My Little Pony fandom, as I understand it, is your knowledge of previous series before Friendship is Magic is like not even a consideration.
I have minimal My Little Pony experience. I am an avid Sea Pony window shopper, and I Chacha the Llama, if you're out there, I would die for you specifically. And Pony Knot, the little costume for the little cosmonaut pony. But a lot of times with the show, part of the reason why I was turned off on caring about the show was kind of like the animosity towards people that if you did in fact like the toys and not necessarily the cartoon, there was kind of this like, well, do you think you're better than me because you care about the toys and not the cartoon? And I'm like, dude, like they're all fucking plastic horses. Like they're literally just designed to sell you plastic horses. So from my minimal experience, I'm going to say yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say in the Transformers fandom, this is going to sound stupid, but like the gatekeeping is almost like more self-imposed. No one's going to like judge you for not watching any or reading or consuming any part of Transformers media. The only exception possibly is that if you've just watched the Bayverse movies and you're like, this is what Transformers is, just because like the Bayverse movies are such a poor representation of what Transformers is. But no one's going to, for the most part, judge you on that. But like, if you're engaging in fandom, if you're reading fan comics, if you're reading fan fiction, if you're, you know, looking at fan art, all of this stuff is being constantly updated, and like your own personal enjoyment of it may be limited if you're not willing to expand the canon that you want to read, which is like fine, it's your choice, but like that's sort of how I see it. But while the My Little Pony and Transformers fandoms themselves have relatively niche followership, by which I mean When I'm talking about fandoms, I'm talking about people who are, again, engaging very directly with these mm-hmm. fan works. Mm-hmm. Both of them have enough cultural capital to be widely recognized by people outside of fandoms as significant parts of pop culture. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you ask a random person on the street, like, who voiced Starscream in a 1984 cartoon series Transformers, they're not going to be able to tell you it was Chris Latta. But
Audrey can.
but if you ask someone off the street, like, who's Optimus Prime, the chances are they're going to know who Optimus Prime is, right? There's enough cultural yeah. capital for there to be, like, widely recognized characters for both of these mm-hmm, things. Mm-hmm. So the difference between, like, those other fandoms I mentioned that sort of started before the internet age and have thrived, and My Little Pony and Transformers, and the reason that My Little Pony and Transformers have been able to grow their fandoms and stay as relevant as they are is, unsurprisingly, capitalism. And specifically, consumerism. Because no matter what anyone else thinks of the properties, Transformers and My Little Pony are both, first and foremost, toy lines. Yeah. Any media built around them is, frankly, incidental. And it only has mm-hmm. one purpose. To sell more toys. Right.
Toys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cash register noise.
Exactly.
Well, and the thing about them is that they are both such fantastic toys, and the fact that, like, they're perfect for kids to project their imagination onto and mm-hmm. play in these really grand games. So, like, they're really enduring toys for, like, the same reason Lego is. You know, it's not quite like mm-hmm. how Lego will go in spells where it's like, goodbye, Bionicle. Goodbye, I miss you and I loved you. But, you know, Transformers endure. There are always Bionicle. Vehicles. And those vehicles can always be cool robots. There are also always ponies, I guess,
they
too.
They can also be big-ass planets.
And the reverse of it as well. Cars are always cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there will always be Hot Wheels.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because cars are cool.
Yeah. You're right.
So, like...
Girls will always love horses. Yeah.
Right. There will always be horse girls. God I'll just bless. Keep drawing horses.
Just keep drawing horses. What a good comic.
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, before we can talk about, like, how these fandoms switched, we have to, like, actually talk about how these fandoms started and actually got popular. Mm-hmm. So, both My Little Pony and Transformers are original Hasbro properties. Hasbro is the single largest toy company in the world, a title which it has enjoyed for more than 3 decades. Other Hasbro original properties include Furby, Gem, Tonka, and Monopoly. They also own the trademarks.
Where's my Furby fandom?
It exists.
Oh, it's out there, bruh.
It's there.
Where's my Furby lore? It is. Yeah. I know it is.
Have you heard the Furby songs? Furby sing.
I have.
Thank God.
I want new
they sing
Furby
the song of Titans.
Animated series.
Please. I would love that more.
I want the decade-long Furby comic series.
Yes, let's write it. Let's
you
write
get it.
It.
You understand.
Audrey, yeah. You can join us too. Let's do this. Let's fucking go.
The fucking, like, Fraggle Rock ass Furby.
Bro, that'd be so fucking
Henson
good.
Henson Company, Fraggle. Get on board.
Please. Hello, Hasbro. It is us. We are 3 podcasters, and we think that we should write Furby comic. Please, reach us at this time.
So, in addition to other original properties, they also own the trademarks for products originally made by Parker Brothers, Kenner, and Milton Bradley. And in 1999, they bought out Wizards of the Coast, the company that makes Dungeons & Dragons and Magic the Gathering. When I say Hasbro,
no, but
the
capitalism is good. Capitalism yeah. is good.
Antitrust
capitalism
laws,
is great.
Never heard of them.
Yeah, never when I say them. That Hasbro is the biggest toy and game company in the world, I say that with my whole chest. So, this company was started almost a century ago in 1923 by 3 Polish-Jewish immigrant brothers, Herman Hillel and Henry Hassenfeld, the Hasbros.
Love
yes,
that.
Originally it was incorporated as Hassenfeld Brothers Incorporated. It was later chartered to Hasbro as they grew. In the first 20 years, they originally started the way many Jewish immigrant entrepreneurs of that time did with textiles, but pivoted pretty quickly to the production of basic toys, which they made out of clay, and they also did like doctor and nurse sets. Like those were their play sets.
Interesting. Yeah.
And then they got into plastics to send to the military during World War II to supplement those toy lines. So they got into plastic production not to create toys, but to support them, to sell to the military so they could support their toy production.
Interesting.
So it's just evil and terrible all the way around is what you're saying here.
Well, I mean, to be fair, they were killing Nazis.
It was, yeah, true.
Okay, you know what? Fair, fair.
An opportunity strikes, yeah.
Fair.
Their first virally successful toy was Mr. Potato Head, which they started producing in 1952. But it would take more than another decade to create the first action figure, which is a term they coined for boys who didn't want to play with dolls when they created G.I. Joe in 1964.
It's wild how much we take that term for granted as sort of something that has just like always existed. But when you really break it down to it's like bare parts of like action figure, of course, that is something that is like developed by a marketing team to like differentiate from like the normal, you know, like doll standard or what have you. That I've never thought about that. Thank you for that wonderful little bulb you have lit off in my brain.
Little fun facts with Audrey.
Yeah. G.I. Joe was massively popular, and it marked a huge change in the trajectory of Hasbro's success, transforming it from like a stable but otherwise fairly unremarkable toy producer to a major contender in controlling the vast majority of the market share. Hasbro was also smart enough as well to adapt with its environment. So when the Vietnam War in the late 60s made military toys extremely unappealing, they pushed a new narrative for G.I. Joe that focused less on the army and much more on adventuring. Think about like the Johnny Bravo kind of.
You mean Johnny Quest?
Sorry, yes. Johnny, Jesus. Johnny Quest himself. It's like... Oh, God. Redacted. Johnny Quest. So, you know, they were willing to be flexible, but that eventually, even that much wasn't enough to help dwindling sales. And by the mid-70s, Hasbro was really actually struggling to come out in the black. So, as they say, desperation breeds innovation. And just like Stan Lee's run on Marvel created a golden age of comic characters, Hasbro in the 1980s created a golden age of toy IPs.
Interesting.
So in 1982, Hasbro launched My Little Pony, targeting an audience of young girls that had for years been dominated by Mattel and their Barbie line. The original My Little Pony line had six colorful horses with uniquely colored bodies, manes, and symbols on their hips that in later generations would be referred to as cutie marks. Hasbro was one of the first, like, brain geniuses to be like, we can make people pay for the same product over and over again if we change the colors. Like, the production value, like, creating a My Little Pony toy, it's one mold. It's one mold, and they just change the colors, and people will buy that mold six times. And it's got, there's, I mean, I will talk about this a little bit.
But Audrey, like, they're all different characters with distinct personalities. You can't say this about them. They're totally different.
Different cutie marks. They have different storylines. Some of them are flocked.
It's so, I mean, but it's brilliant. It's brilliant. They were like one of the first companies to really like drill down on the fact that it's like they can get people for no change in cost to continue buying the same product. It's absolutely like genius of them. And like, I mean, this affects like the cartoon. I'm going to talk about like the quality of the media that came out with these franchises as well, because it wasn't very good. But like when Transformers, the cartoon of Transformers came out in 1984, there are all these scenes of that, like, people are just like, what the fuck? Why are there two Starscreams here? Where like, they just like forgot what colors to paint them. And it didn't matter because they're like, it's the same fucking model. Who gives a shit? Like, and it's just like, there's so many like off color, off, it's off model. It's so funny.
I love that.
And so speaking of Transformers, as I mentioned, 2 years later in 1984, borrowing from two Japanese mecha toy lines, actually, that didn't have, that created these toys, but didn't have any personalities or anything or storylines or anything to go with them. Hasbro launched Transformers, a toy line of robots that transformed into planes, trains, and automobiles, and then they literally took some of these toys from these other toy lines, these Japanese toy lines, brought them over to the US, and then gave them like names and storylines.
Was that done legally, or was that?
Yes, like, yeah, yeah. No, they were, they were.
It was a deal.
It was a collaboration. I mean, okay. I don't. It's hard to find the details of what this actually looked like, but like they did some combination of buying like distribution rights.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And some IP stuff as well, because okay, they did cool. give these, again, like these toys were like almost like gacha, right?
Yeah.
But like random gacha that you would find where it was like.
They're the little ones. I've seen them. Yeah. They're like little tiny ones, right? Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So there's like the Kyos that are still like produced today, but like, but there was just nothing to you. You go, it's like generic robot toy. You go to a store, it's generic robot toy. There was nothing to them. So Hasbro maintained the right to like intellectual property for the characters that they were creating. And I think they like bought the rights for distribution of some of these.
Nice.
The original, a lot of the original Transformers were actually the robot forms of them, at least, were designed by the creator of the mecha anime Macross, Soji Kawamari. Yeah. And then Takara Toys, which still collaborates with Hasbro to this day on Transformers.
Are you going to talk about Takara Ponies? Because those are like my holy grail of like toy collecting.
Yeah.
They're so cute.
So Takara Toys is a Japanese toy company. And to this day, they have a very strong relationship with Hasbro. Mm-hmm. With the Transformers toys, one of the questions is always actually how you get them to transform, right? Is how you design something that like looks like this robot that you've designed in a cartoon or a movie or whatever. And then also the car or plane. Or whatever that it turns into.
Well, and transforms intuitively enough for children to be able to use them effectively and play with them.
I will say that's actually less of a concern.
Let the children suffer.
Yeah, it's like get your parent to do this. But in any case, like, figuring out the logistics of that, like, Takara still does a lot of the modeling for that. And they also do, like, the nice, like, $200 to $500 statues for Transformers that I would like very much, but I don't have that much money. So this was, like, the beginning of Hasbro's relationship with Takara. And obviously they have expanded their relationships since then to their other media properties, including My Little Pony and the Takara Ponies, as well as some others. But anyway, between these two new IPs in the early 1980s, Hasbro exploded. To give you an idea of how popular these properties were, by the mid-80s, Hasbro had overtaken Mattel as the largest toy company in the world, beating back their Barbie fortune.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Goodbye, Miss Barbara Millicent Roberts.
Yeah. The fundamental difference between these toy lines and the toys that Hasbro and other companies, for that matter, had tried to launch before is that at launch, both of these lines came with cartoons that created lore to support the toys and also spread that lore across the nation and world in an easily digestible format. Suddenly, we weren't just talking about figures. We were talking about characters with real storylines that attracted viewers in incredible numbers. For the first time, a toy company had figured out how to generate a fan base that felt a real emotional connection to their products outside of just collector value or the basic entertainment that comes with playing with a toy.
Yeah. Well, and it has so much interplay then, too, of like, it's like, well, I have Optimus Prime, and if I don't have any of the others, then it's like, I can't play out those relationships between them, so now I need to get Starscream so I can at least have some kind of character interaction. Because Optimus Prime and G.I. Joe do not spend time together canonically, and what's even the point of exploring that?
Well, depends on what canon.
As I was gonna say, what crossover comic? I think there's a crossover comic.
There are many G.I. Joe and Transformers crossovers.
Wasn't there one that's like 2-3 years ago, too?
Yeah.
I think there was one pretty recently.
They're literally all the time. I mean, there was a Transformers My Little Pony crossover comic like 3 months ago.
That's so, what I get for hanging out in the comic shop to see yeah. my friend John.
And Hasbro, I mean, Hasbro double dipped in everything. So I mentioned Chris Latta earlier was the original voice of Starscream. He was also the voice of Cobra Commander in the original G.I. Joe.
There you go.
So, you know, it's Hasbro cut as many corners as they could to min-max their profits. And it did work. It did work is the thing about it. So even today, merchandising remains a huge consideration companies take when they decide to greenlight series, especially cartoons. You hear about it all the time. Series that barely get off the ground and can't get renewed because product plans fall through. Symbiotic Titan from Samurai Jack creator Genndy Tartakovsky, as well as the DC cartoons Young Justice and Green Lantern, the animated series, were also canceled early for exactly this reason, because they couldn't get toy lines in order. But Hasbro doesn't have that problem because they go about this ass backwards. Like, the toys, the toys come first. The cartoons and other media are just one big advertisement for them, which means that the media that forms the canon of these franchises over the years certainly has varied in quality. But Hasbro don't care. Hasbro doesn't care about the value of a cartoon or comic. Their entire philosophy is basically, why must a cartoon be good? Is it not enough to see a horse or a robot large in color? And yeah. As someone who cares very much about Transformers, I can say that G1 is a hot mess shit show. There was no quality control for that whatsoever. That's kind of part of its appeal, honestly. And so, you know, while some of the creatives who work on these series absolutely have real artistic visions, I'm not arguing that at all. Hasbro as a company has nothing even approaching artistic integrity. The only thing that matters to them is sales. And My Little Pony and Transformers get unbelievable sales. This is also because, as mentioned before, Hasbro is smart enough to A, recognize cash cows when they see them, and B, update them with the times to keep milking that money from them. Transformers and MLP have, since their inception in the 80s, been market researched and focus grouped to hell and back, to death, to make sure that they continue to appeal to a changing audience. The flip side of this is that the My Little Pony and Transformers fandoms have a huge amount of influence on their source material, way more than the average fan has. In the almost 40 years since each property was conceived, for example, fans have created terminology that have since been integrated into canon. So in the Transformers fandom, for example, there are things like Seekers and Coneheads, which refer to specific models. Yeah, it's specific models and frame types that are absolutely referred to in canon now. And Sparklings, which are children, which is a canonized term as well. Ultimately, I think Hasbro has ideas about who they're targeting with their products and their media, but they don't really care who's buying their toys as long as those toys sell, or what they need to do to make those sales happen. Hasbro will capitulate to fans without blinking.
Wonderful. Creating a fantastic fan environment in relationship to creators that definitely won't lead to any problems whatsoever.
Yeah. So, like, I think that is important to keep in mind that, like, Hasbro is happily at the whims of their audience. Like, they don't care. They do not care.
But have they made the robots gay? Have they made them gay, Audrey?
Buddy. Oh, Cass.
Not only have they made the robots gay, they made the robots trans.
Yeah.
Hasbro, you may have a little bit of my money.
Yeah. There are at least 4 trans lesbian robots in the not the currently running IDW comics, but the iteration that ran from 2008 to 2018. RC, Lug, Anode, and Starseeker are all trans lesbians.
Impeccable. Good to know. Thank you, Tease.
Of course.
It's one of those things where I've seen so much from the fandom, but not, like, the canonical material, that I don't know what is fan interpretation and, like, fanonization versus canon. But
Rat Trap is my friend. That's canon.
hearing the way Hasbro will just, like, capitulate to their fans, though, it kind of makes a lot of sense that, like, these things do actually happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I will say, none of this happens in, like, the cartoons targeting children. Like, Hasbro still has their limits. But the comics, which target a distinctly young adult and older mm-hmm. audience, have many a gay married robot, I will say. Many a gay married robot and several a trans gay married robot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, like, this is sort of how, like, these franchises continued for roughly 25 years, from about 1985 to 2010. Transformers had an exception in 2007 when the Michael Bay movies started to air, and they brought the franchise back into a cultural spotlight. But honestly, outside of being a summer blockbuster, it didn't have much impact on the longevity of the fandom itself. Mm-hmm. It didn't exactly bring in, like, a ton of new dedicated fans who were, like, really invested in the franchise. Mm-hmm. And the fans that already existed found the movies to be fairly poor adaptations of the original.
Gee, I can't imagine why.
Right. Of the original source material. So it didn't really change the makeup that much. There were, I'm not gonna pretend like there weren't, like, any people who got, like, heavily invested from the movies. There were, but it wasn't significant. What it did do was make a shit ton of money, though. Mm-hmm. A shit ton of money. And that sort of brings us to 2010. So, in 2010, Hasbro decided to reboot both of these flagship series. While both My Little Pony and Transformers had had ongoing media since 1985, Hasbro wanted to consolidate the canons for both of them, as well as modernize them in a fun and creative and money-making way. For Transformers, this became Transformers Prime. This was notable for a few reasons. It was the first CGI series since Beast Wars finished airing in 1999, and significantly more successful at it. More than a decade later in terms of how it looked. It also got Frank Welker and Peter Cullen back in their original roles as Megatron and Optimus Prime. And the rest of the voice cast was also pretty damn impressive. It included Steve Bloom as Starscream, Jeffrey Combs as Ratchet, Nolan North as Smokescreen, and Gina Torres as Arachnid, just to, like, name a few
damn
members of the voice talent there. Prime was conceived as a more mature series than the last series, which had just ended, Transformers Animated, which ran from 2007 to 2010 as, I guess, sort of like a stopgap between, like, the Michael Bay movies and what Hasbro ultimately wanted to do next, which was, like, also a fun series. It, most notably for me, it has Tom Kenny as Starscream, which I think is a hilarious voice choice. But Prime, when Prime came out, it was really aiming to hit a slightly older target audience of tween boys, where, like, Animated was really targeting elementary school boys. Prime mm-hmm. really was targeting, like, middle school and above.
That was when the Thundercats reboot came out, too. I think there was, like, a big push for a little while there for more later middle school, early high school cartoons for boys, yeah. I think, in yeah. a whole, because, like, of the Thundercats reboot and stuff like that. And there was something else. Young Justice was still going at that time, yeah. too. So, like, there's yeah. a lot, yeah.
Yeah. And then for My Little Pony, they created My Little Pony Friendship is Magic.
Rest in peace, Queen.
Listeners, this is where great googly moogly, it all went to shit.
Oh no.
Yeah, so.
Oh, so bad.
Unlike Transformers, My Little Pony had dwindled in its mainstream relevance. There were animated series throughout the 90s, but none met the same success as the original 1982 show. And by the turn of the millennium, media around it was relegated entirely to direct-to-video films. Friendship is Magic was pretty experimental. Hasbro wanted to create something that would replicate the success the Bay movies had had for Transformers, but had a limited budget and also concept for what that would look like. Mm-hmm. The eventual showrunner, Lauren Faust, at first actually had come to Hasbro pitching an original concept, but they asked her instead to come up with some ideas for a new My Little pony show.
Was that Planetary Girls?
Maybe. I'm not sure.
I was into Faust's work for a little while there.
Yeah, it might be. She was initially extremely resistant to the idea of running My Little Pony. Faust had always found that shows based on girls' toys specifically were disappointing in their messaging, and mm-hmm. previous My Little Pony incarnations were no exception, with a heavy focus on what she considered to be frivolous and highly gendered activities like cosmetics and tea parties.
Yeah.
When she accepted the role of showrunner, she did so with the intent to show the cartoons for girls, and I quote, "don't have to be a puddle of smushy, cutesy-wootsy, goody-two-shoeness." The series was greenlit, probably, I mean, listen, I don't have the actual numbers for this, sorry listeners, but what I would imagine on a fairly shoestring budget, given that it was animated in Flash.
Yeah.
So both series were put on what is now Discovery Family, but was back then known as The Hub, which mm-hmm. is Discovery Channel's collaboration with Hasbro. And the richer nature of their stories and characters, plus the wide distribution on a major network, meant that they were able to both reach and appeal to a wider audience than previous incarnations had. As with most major cartoons targeting a more adolescent audience, even these days, Prime and Friendship is Magic both found early viewership with a not insignificant population of young to middle-aged adults who regularly enjoy cartoons.
Yeah.
And then something interesting happened. Those adults got really horny.
Stop. No, no.
Robots hot. Ponies I don't get. I won't shame you, but I don't get the ponies. Robots hot, though. Robots hot.
Hard agree, and we'll talk about that more. Now, to be clear, there have been furries and clankers for as long as there have been anthropomorphic and robot characters. Osamu mm-hmm. Tezuka was making sexy mouse art in the 1950s. Yeah. This isn't new. Mm-hmm. Like, however, I'm going to talk about this more in a bit, but I don't think we can underestimate the power of horny on the change in audiences that these two franchises found in 2010.
Yeah.
But before we can talk about the change in audiences, we actually have to talk about how they found their audiences to begin with, and specifically we need to talk about the My Little Pony fandom.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we need to talk about bronies. So.
Yeah, you got them.
This was all a ruse. Audrey was going to come on and talk about bronies from the very beginning.
Newsflash, asshole! I was talking about bronies the entire time! So,
bronies.
Yeah, so...
I've done my time.
This was from, I would say... Maybe I have a skewed view of this. Again, I don't have numbers to back this up. Mm-hmm. But... from my perspective, 2005 to 2010 was sort of like the height of 4chan usership. It was when 4chan as a website was well enough known to have people driving to it and like wide enoughly recognized as like the house where memes are made, essentially, have people using it. And before there was enough competition in other forms of social media for people to be like, actually this isn't doing it for me anymore,
mm-hmm.
and go elsewhere. And most of the traffic that was driven to and from 4chan was to 4chan's B-board, their random board. But there was a real is again to this day still a dedicated user base that uses all of their other boards not to be just like shitty edgelords, but to actually, like, form communities around shared interests. And one of those boards is CO, the Comics and Cartoons Board, which is where was sort of like the place to be in 2010 to talk about animated series and comics, regardless of their target audience. And My Little Pony Friendship is Magic naturally came up, but it didn't actually start off massively popular. The burst in popularity for Friendship is Magic was actually fairly reactionary. So what happened was, in October 2010, when it was originally broadcast, almost immediately after, there was a review by Amida Media of Cartoon Brew that panned it pretty badly.
Mm-hmm.
and wrote that the show was a sign of, and I quote again, the end of creator-driven era in TV animation. I understand what he is trying to say here, actually. His point was that, he actually hugely admires Lauren Faust, and was basically saying that by relegating someone with the creative power of Lauren Faust to making a show about toys, to sell toys, like, what a waste of talent.
Okay, that's fair.
Him saying, like the idea that Faust would be relegated to this toy-centric show to, push consumerism was just, incredibly disheartening to him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And again, another quote, an admission of defeat for the entire movement, a white flag waving moment for the TV animation industry. Mm. So this essay, someone linked to this essay on Ko. And while MLP had been, again, it popped up as most cartoons did and do on Ko, this drove a ton of people to start watching it in reaction to this negative review. Because the review was so alarmist. And so, so negative, and people liked it, the Ko liked it, and it soon spread to all the other boards of 4chan. Mm-hmm. So, again, I'm going to say something that I don't have any actual evidence to back me up, so, disclaimer, I think that bronies are a 4chan psyop gone wrong. I think they fell for their own joke.
Stop. Oh my god.
Audrey gets our podcast taken down. We get DDoSed.
Oh my... Stop. No. No!
I really think... Okay, listen, I think that there are people who liked it. I've watched Friendship is Magic. It's fine.
Yeah.
You're not going to convince me that this many young adult and to middle-aged men are as into... genuinely, sincerely into this cartoon as the movement created.
How much do you think it was they started liking it ironically, and then, like most of us, when we do things ironically, we inevitably adopt it as part of our character, right? Where it's, I can say yeet, but then I start to say yeet far too much. And so maybe it started as an ironic liking and undertaking of adoring this cartoon, and then it became too real. And the car had gone too far off the cliff to turn it around and stop and look back. Ooh, boys.
I think that's exactly what happened. I think that's what I mean by it being a psyop internally, that they're just like, haha, we like this thing ironically, ha ha ha. And then they're like, this is my personality now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it, again, I'm not going to discount the fact that there is a real audience that I think generally did like the cartoon, as there's a real audience of young adults and to middle-aged adults who like any of the cartoons, Ed and Eddie or SpongeBob or whatever, are, the animators put in adult wink-wink, jokes in there that fly over the head, and it's fun, it's nostalgic, there's definitely a real appeal there, but you are not going to convince me by any means ever that there is a, this substantial amount of men, grown-ass men. I think
you wildly underestimate the ability of things that are not even that good to capture a massive audience.
It's specifically about the type of men that bronies are.
Yeah.
And, and the content of the show, Friendship is Magic, which is, pretty fucking feminist.
Mm-hmm. The oddity of it, right? Is that, I forget what book it is in, but this guy recounts this story, right, of watching a movie and having been bullied by all his classmates, and his classmates don't see themselves in the bully. They're cheering for the underdog. And so it's it's wild to me the level at which consumers and viewers can get involved in something and really relate to something without realizing that in that story, they're the villain, the reality of it. And I think that's what makes brony culture, even more fascinating, right? It's, this point you're bringing up about how bronies tended to be very sexist men who were very entitled to women in, a lot of really weird and presumptuous ways. And Friendship is Magic was so much the antithesis of that in all of its teaching and talking points. Oh, it's just wild.
So, all this is to say, yes, first of all, but also, 4chan... explains the widespread of its popularity, I do mm-hmm. think we need to go back to the horny to talk about the switch in audiences.
Yeah.
2010, both of these shows get a, like I said, not insignificant viewership from young adults to middle age. And here's the thing. One of these shows has a predominantly female cast, and the other show has a predominantly male cast, which means that for horny adults who are looking at it, like, if you were a straight man, you are going to sexually fantasize about the show with a predominantly female cast. And if you were a straight woman, frankly, you're going... Don't look at me like that.
Horses. They're horses!
Oh.
I mean, I've seen it. We all know the story of my first kiss.
I'm sorry. No, we don't. What?
What? Wait, oh my god, you don't know? You don't know
about oh, Cass. You're in oh, for Cass. A treat.
Oh, Cass. I went on a date with a brony. And
oh no.
Yeah, so this time it's personal. They're fucking I mean, he was nice enough, but he was weird in ways that a lot of men who are really into 4chan are. And that's where I'll leave it at. I'll tell you about it off camera.
So I really look, these fandoms both have their own specific terminology for sex, like entire dictionaries of terminology.
You can say clopping.
You're allowed to say clopping. You can say the C word.
No, I can say clopping. I can say spike and valve. Believe me, I can say plug and play. Tisa's seen the PowerPoint. I made a PowerPoint about how Transformers fuck.
You sure have. It was good. It was a good PowerPoint.
I definitely won that PowerPoint party, is all I'm saying.
I think between that one and the Matt Damon, dare I say, I'm partial to my Matt Damon version. Yes. One, but yeah. I think we too. We did a good
yeah. one. Yeah. Two trucks are having sex. So for me, I think it wasn't the only reason, but I do. And again, like, there aren't numbers for this. There aren't numbers mm-hmm. to say it, like, how many people are sexually attracted to My Little Ponies or how many people are sexually attracted to Transformers. But I genuinely believe that is the driving force for why these audiences change so dramatically in the way that they did.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, because again, like before then, these shows hit a much wider adult audience than they had before. And adults want different things from their media than children do. Yeah. And I'm not saying every adult out there is horny, but like... Like, there are enough of them that, like,
yeah,
like, mm-hmm. if again, like, if you are going to be projecting your sexual fantasies onto fictional characters, you're going to do it for the fictional characters that align with your sexuality, whether or not they're human.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a furry or a clanker, you're gonna do it. You're gonna do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you're gonna find some things out about yourself if you're not before that.
Yeah, yeah. True.
Question for you. Do you think that there is any relation to, like, so... Girls generally, you know, or I should say adult women were not as into My Little Pony in the way that adult men were. And I'm wondering if part of that had anything to do with the fact that, like, women don't need to sit down and watch Baby's First Feminist Lesson. And so the content to them was not as enriching or as, you know, engaging, because it's like, okay, this is like really surface level stuff. But for some men, that might have been like, wow, this is really deep. This is really profound.
Saying that My Little Pony is teaching men that women are in fact people and deserve to be treated like fucking human beings.
I think maybe that was the intent of the show. Unfortunately, I don't think that got across to that portion of the viewer base in some cases.
Yeah, I mean,
listen, I watched like the first two seasons, I think, of Friendship is Magic.
Yeah, I watched on and off.
It was like, it was fine, but as you said, I was just like, the other thing as well is that Friendship is Magic was also, I mean, it had richer lore and storyline than anything My Little Pony had done before, but, like, the bar for that was on the ground.
Yeah.
That's why Lauren Boss didn't want to do it. Like, the bar was on the ground, so anything she did was an improvement.
Mm-hmm.
And its target audience was much younger than Transformers was at that point. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We are talking elementary school girls.
Yeah.
And it is like baby's first feminist text, which is like, it's great and empowering for mm-hmm. young girls, but it's like, I was like, okay, like, woo.
Yeah. Yeah. My Little Pony walked so that She-Ra could run.
Stop. Shut up. Cass, I'm begging you. Oh my god.
Am I wrong? I should say, My Little Pony trotted so that She-Ra could gallop.
All right, now you're just gonna kill me. I was actually on your side at first, but now I'm not. Now you lost me.
I'm being silenced on my own podcast.
Yeah, you are, actually. Goodbye. You're the one who edits, but goodbye.
hey, patrons, for $8,000 a month, buy my silence.
Exactly.
Yeah, sure, okay. I would love that. Please give me $8,000 a month. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, and I mean, since then, these fandoms have grown in like interesting and sometimes distressing ways.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't advise anyone looking this up, but there are a lot of Etsy sellers selling horse fleshlights.
Yes, there are.
I know, but I don't want to think about it.
That you can customize in any colors that you want. Stop two it. Holes.
Stop it. Stop it.
I'm silencing Audrey now. Audrey, you're our guest, but you must stop.
You did this. Cease. You invited me out. That was your first mistake.
I know. I made a mistake. I mean, I know about all these things. I've seen these things with my own two eyes. I know they're real and I know they're out there, but I don't want to think about it.
The quote-unquote issue, though, right, with bronies isn't the fact that, like, you know, it's adult men being sexually attracted to horses. I don't give a shit. Sentient horses. That's my qualifier. What I do care about, though, is the fact that those adult men then made that so fandom. It made that fandom so uninhabitable and so inhospitable to children. And so, like, children couldn't enter those spaces without being bombarded by pornography. That's a huge problem.
Which is so fucked up.
Yeah. I mean, there is, I mean, you hear about it frequently, but, like, I think about all the stories of, like, moms who buy their children, like, MLP toys, and they end up being sex toys, they end up being fleshlights again! Whoops! You accidentally bought a fleshlight! No.
Terrible.
So, I guess, my question is, I know you're probably gonna get to this, so maybe this won't be relevant, but I know a big chunk of the Transformers fandom is because of the comic. So when does the comic come into play with the animation?
Yeah, so the comics and the cartoons are like fairly separate.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So just like with the cartoons, the comics have gone through many owners and mm-hmm. many iterations. So originally, actually, Marvel for years and years and years was the producer and distributor of Transformers comics. And they eventually...
Two kings of their own fucking kingdoms.
Yeah.
Damn.
Specifically Marvel UK. Oh. So it was based in England. And I think that actually contributes to some of the culture around the comics today, because a lot of the writers are still English.
Uh-huh.
Specifically, James Roberts, who is credited with writing some of the most, like, progressive, queer parts of the IDW G1 comics, is English and has a very strong relationship with his English. There's also this guy named Simon Furman, who is just, like, a fucking menace. Everyone is like looking at Simon Furman and throwing darts at him and saying, I've had about just enough of this dude. He is like rampantly sexist, rampantly homophobic. Ew. And was the head, and he was like the head writer of Transformers during the entire Marvel UK line, and still does writing for not the comics but like other Hasbro properties. Like, he's one of the head writers of the mobile game, and like every time, like, Every time he does something, it's just like, haha, I'm going to make fun of female fans again. Isn't it funny how they think these robots are gay? Meanwhile, James Roberts, like, these robots are literally gay. They're literally gay married. Like,
doesn't the comics, like, even have consultants that are, like, trans women and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck, man? Like, why are you making fun of, like, literally people that you work with?
Oh, so like, actually, that is great.
Why are you
so,
making fun of the people that pay your paycheck? More like.
Literally. Oh, my God.
So, like, Furman... So Furman did write some of the earlier IDW. So it passed from Marvel to Dreamwave, and then in 2008 passed to IDW. Okay. All of the Hasbro properties transferred to IDW. So IDW does all of them, frequently crosses them over. So there are G.I. Joe crossovers, there are My Little Pony crossovers, there are ROM Legendary Defender crossovers. There's a Ghostbusters crossover where they have to capture Starscream's ghost. It's really funny.
Oh my God, that's good.
It's actually a good comic. But yeah, ever since, the IDW 1 comic that ran from 2008 to 2018, we are now in IDW 2, which I have not kept up with. But IDW 1 ran from 2008 to 2018 and has moments of it that are quite progressive. There are also moments of it that suck shit, and those moments are mostly, again, because of Simon Furman. So he introduced the first trans character in RC in the 2008 comics in, like, the worst, most transphobic way that, like, you could possibly imagine. So he's like, there are no female Transformers. Transformers don't have a concept of gender. They all use he, him pronouns. There are no female Transformers. RC got captured by an ancient evil scientist and got gender introduced to her as a form of torture. And now she's a woman.
Wow.
Okay, so there's going to be just like a whole episode unpacking that one. Wow. Yikes.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking
okay,
bad.
Okay, let's move on before I think about that one too much.
But yes, the comics are, so that is part of it as well, is that, like, so not, mm-hmm. First of all, like, women were horny for giant robots because, as established, robots hot, but yes. It also, like, started to find a huge queer non-audience, like, non-women audience, mm-hmm. as these sort of relationships developed. And the comics specifically, way more than any of the shows actually, go way more into actual lore for, like, the species. Mm-hmm. Like, how the species operates and, yeah. Like, what a 4 million year long civil war looks like and mm-hmm. things like genocide and class. Like, it's a class war. The entire thing starts off as a class war. Mm-hmm. Megatron literally writes the robot equivalent of the Communist Manifesto. It's called Towards Peace. Wow. And it's literally the robot Communist Manifesto because he was a miner relegated to, like, working in the mines because of what he turned into, and a functionalist society that said that you could only be what you transform into, and he railed against that because he was a poet. Like, I could go on about Transformers lore for a long time, but it's good shit, OP.
It's good shit. It's tasty from what you've told me. So.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I feel like there is so much, bronies have made such a name for themselves at mm-hmm. this point that they're like, there's so much more we could talk about, but like, I don't know how to go any further. This is just basically me being like,
how did Hasbro respond to all of that?
Like I said, Thog don't care.
Thog
don't care. Hasbro doesn't care. Hasbro is like, mm-hmm. we are... I mean, listen, Hasbro is never going to be like, yes, you can fuck Twilight Sparkle, but like, like, they're not, obviously they're not going to come out saying that, but like, if they're selling toys, they're selling toys. As long as, mm-hmm. I mean, I think even Hasbro, capitalist consumerists as they are, have had to, at least in spaces where they do have control, mm-hmm. you know, try to make it clear that it's like, you can't chase young girls out
yeah.
of these spaces or whatever, mm-hmm. and, you know, mm-hmm. try to make sure, like, protect kids. I think they have both mm-hmm. a moral and, frankly, more importantly to them, legal responsibility to make mm-hmm. sure that happens. But, like, the reality is that Hasbro actually doesn't have control over that many spaces.
Yeah.
There are conventions that they mm-hmm. they can control a little bit, but, like, outside of that, it's like, I mean, they're not on AO3, they're not on DeviantArt, they're not on 4chan.
Thank God for that. Yeah.
Has Hasbro ever done anything that's like, I don't want to say a competition because I fucking hate the concept of like companies doing competitions, but like kind of been like a, hello, we will produce this pony or transformer if you win. Like, have they ever done anything like that?
Because I donate like $10,000 to our Kickstarter, to my video game Kickstarter, and you shut can up. One frame.
Stop. Don't even talk.
Your
about
fan
that.
Troll will be in one frame.
Oh well, did you also hear about the My Little Pony Kickstarter? There was like somebody attempting to do a My Little Pony like fighting game, essentially, and that bombed. I don't think it ever got the full funding because it ended up being like a total hoax, like money scam type deal. But there was like an attempt by some third party group or something like that. I read about it like once, like a few years back. But I'm always curious to know if there's something like that that goes on, because I feel like then that also kind of brings some entitlement as well from a fan base, because it's like, we created this. This is ours.
Yeah.
With My Little Pony, there was a lot of that too, with like, I hate the name, but like, Derpy Hooves then later got renamed to something else. And then like Dr.
That Hooves wasn't as ableist. Like,
yeah. Yikes. I mean, Stony Pony is real and he's out there. Even if he's not in the cartoon, Stony Pony is real and he's my friend. Just like how Rat Trap is. And
Rat Trap.
But like with Transformers, like I have a friend who actually has like done a cover for IDW before, like,
right.
I'd assume people have like their own Transformer OCs, like,
yes. So I would say the concept of OCs being integrated in canon, mm-hmm. not so much.
Okay.
But as you mentioned, like the sourcing of artists and writers and uh-huh. consultants or whatever from the fan community is massive. Massive, mm-hmm. massive, okay. massive. So there are a few writers and artists that IDW regularly works with, but mm-hmm. there are also, I mean, Sarah Stone, who, for example, who I think a lot of people know for her own work, her own original work featuring sexy robots. but before that, she started off actually as like, well, I won't say she started off, but she was a big fan of Transformers Prime, created mm-hmm. human former designs of, which is what people just refer to as Gijinka for Transformers as human formers.
Yeah.
Human former designs for all of the Decepticons
mm-hmm.
in Prime. I have the set of them, actually, that I bought from her at New York Comic Con before she was an official artist for the series, and then ended up doing my favorite art for the official comics.
Okay, now,
that's so cool. Oh, that's wonderful.
One of the series she did the art for, Windblade, is pretty good. The other series is not as great. No fault of her own. It's just badly written by Mairead Scott,
mm-hmm.
who's not a good author, sorry. But when everyone was like, years after Simon Furman fucked up RC, and everyone was like, oh shit, we need to do something about RC, and like this whole issue, mm-hmm. they reached out to a fan who's a trans woman and asked her to, and basically brought her in on as a consultant to be like, all right, how do we make this like not horribly transphobic anymore, yeah. and asked her to help out with that. When again, tons of artists, cover artists, actual internal artists, they are incredibly engaged with the community, and like again, incredibly tapped in with the community, because Hasbro makes them.
Mm-hmm.
Hasbro's like, are you selling, son? And if they're not, then they need to switch it up, or they'll probably get canceled.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think, Audrey, you really, I can't even think of a joke here, because they're horses and they're robots, and I love my friends who are horny, but sometimes people need to go to horny jail, and that includes bronies. Sorry.
Thank you so much for coming on. And thank you so much for joining us, Audrey. It was delightful, and I loved learning about this. Where can we find you online to really, you know, lambast you with our opinions about bronies?
Yeah, great. I mentioned my other two podcasts before, Wild Cool Robot, which you can find on Twitter at Wild Cool Podcast, and Pod of Greed, which you can find on Twitter at Pod of Greedcast. You can find both of those shows, as I said, on the Noise Space XYZ network, which is at noisespace.xyz. You can find me personally at Optimum on Prime on Tumblr and Twitter, which after an hour plus of discussing this is my funny robot internet joke. And Tease, I don't know if you ever mentioned this, but Tease and I are theoretically trying to start a website.
Oh, God. Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, I haven't.
Yeah, so Tease and I are theoretically trying to start a website. You can follow at The Reticulation on, that's TheReticulation on Tumblr, Facebook, and Twitter for updates about that website that we are trying to start to spotlight and uplift LGBT voices in the realm of pop culture criticism.
We should really get back to that.
We should, shouldn't we? Should.
Yeah. COVID happened, I'm sorry.
Yeah, really?
And then I started this podcast like a dumb fuck.
My name is Cass, and you can find me pretty much everywhere on the internet at Valhethella. That's ValHethella. Tease, where can people find more of you?
You can find me on Twitter at Vicunyad, that is V-I-C-U-N-A-D. If you liked our show, we have a Patreon and we have a Ko-fi. So if you really appreciated this episode, you could always reach out to us. Audrey, do you have like a Ko-fi or anything like that too for people who might want to support you?
I don't personally, but if you listen to Pot of Greed, if you want really good Yu-Gi-Oh! content, if you want really good Yu-Gi-Oh! content and want to support us, we do have a Patreon. That's Patreon/Pot of Greed, where you can get some fun bonus content and physical items if you give us enough money. We send, at $10 a month, we send you actual packages in the mail of t-shirts we design individually for you.
That's impressive.
And mugs and shit. So, yeah.
And you guys also do Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournaments, too. Yeah, right.
We did. We just finished our annual Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournament called Cup of Greed. Yes. Leonard the Monkey won.
Congratulations.
To Leonard the Monkey. We do it in celebration of our young boy Yugi Muto's birthday every year.
So cute. I love it.
And now I have one more year where I don't have to think about this before I have to think of a new character and a new gimmick for next year because all the hosts have to participate.
Perfect. If you enjoyed our theme music, that was by James Wyulo, and he is on Bandcamp under James Y. Cass, who
and
did our cover art?
Our cover art was done by the wonderful Nyalius. You can find more of her on Twitter at Nyalius. It's NYALLIEST. Until next time, be considerate of the fan spaces you inhabit and the other fans there. Don't engage with minors. All right, goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.